roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Glad to be with you after a fun weekend of fights all three nights, including Friday we had two fight cards. We had Invicta FC. We're going to talk about that. We also had Bellator on Showtime. And we had the UFC with an early edition of a fight night this past Saturday. So we had two title fights, actually three title fights, because it was a vacant title. And two champions defending on Friday night. I mean, the women were in action. And then on Friday night, of course, you all know Rob Font, Cody Garbrandt, they threw down in the main event for the UFC. So a nice recap of all those. And I'm saying really, really nice because unfortunately we lost our guest, Christos Giagos, who's coming off a big win at UFC 262 the weekend prior. We were going to catch up with him this week, but he fell off last minute. Apologies for that. We'll make it up to you. Keep an eye on our YouTube channel for that. And then we'll go over the latest news. Diego Sanchez, Josh Fabia, if you haven't heard, they're now on the outs. And guess what? They're starting to sling mud. Who didn't see that one coming, right? Actually, more from the Fabia side because he's the one that did an actual interview. Diego's kind of still reserved. I guess he's got more comments coming this week. Of course, it's Oscar De La Hoya and Dana White. They are not going to be friends anytime soon. Now Oscar's challenging him to a fight. He's really, really pissed that he doesn't get the box George St. Pierre. And so he's calling on Dana White to box him instead. Paul Felder retired from mixed martial arts. We heard that he was on the broadcast this past weekend with Brendan Fitzgerald and Michael Bisping. And then they gave him his moment to retire. Not like many fighters do, which is after a fight. But as he pointed to, he put some gloves down after his last fight, and he's done. So we'll talk about that. We'll reflect a little bit on his career. Jake Paul signing with Showtime. We just can't get away from that guy. But look, we're going to concentrate a lot on these fights that took place this past weekend. So buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, May 24th. Goes. So we're going to start off with the big fights. The one that everyone was talking about on Saturday night, Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt. Ooh, I was on the edge of my seat. I was really interested in this fight. I love this division. Huge, huge fight for both guys. Garbrandt, a former champion in this division, coming off a really, really nice KO about a year ago. Wondering if he could build on that, become a title contender again against a guy like Rob Font, who's been climbing slowly but surely. Well, it was pretty dominant by Rob Font. He won the fight, and even though Garbrandt had some moments, and Garbrandt threw, you know, he's got some heavy hands, it was really Rob Font all night just performing a tactical, clinical fight over a former champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly that. It's so difficult because when you look at that fight, you want to say, boy, Cody Garbrandt's lost a step. But I don't know that it's so much that. It's just Rob Font had a really, really great game plan, and he was able to execute it, starting with that jab. That jab was just in Cody Garbrandt's face nonstop, and it would stop him from doing what he wanted to do. The one thing that I will say about Cody Garbrandt, a lot of people say, his chin, you know, he took some shots from Rob Font, some really good shots, and kept coming forward. But the one thing I will say is his reaction time didn't seem to be what it used to be. You know, he would get hit with shots, and if you watch his eyes, I don't think he was seeing them until they were actually, like, hitting them. And that's a little concerning for me. But overall, it was just a great Rob Font performance. And it was a good performance in regards to Cody Garbrandt as far as just the will to keep going. And still, even at the end, you feel like he's still in it because he's throwing bombs. He's slinging bombs all the way to the very end. But Rob Font, a lot of it, I think, came down to strategy and execution.
The eyes definitely tell us a lot. And Rob Font hit him with a couple shots where Cody's knees, his feet weren't under him, but he recovered, so credit to him. But yes, I saw it as well. I saw it in a different fashion. I just saw it as a look of someone who is concerned, you know, because when you're out there and you're just, you know, you're prepared, you know, you've put in the work, and you know that if you touch someone's chin, they're going to go down. But then all of a sudden you get hit and you have this look like, okay, I'm not 100%. You know what the look was? The look was just my 100% just went down to 90, you know, and then slowly climbing back to 90, and then he would lower it again to maybe 85, like that. And so some fighters kind of give it away that like that, you know, and then some make the actual full recovery. And I thought maybe Garbrandt did at times, but then there was just this not confused, but concerned look. Every time he was sitting on the corner, it was concern. It was less confidence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Sorry, I got you mid-coffee. What's your coffee of the day?
What's the donut place called?
Donut shop?
No. It's like an actual donut place. Yeah. That one.
I haven't had coffee in like 3 days, and I went through a horrible headache yesterday.
Really?
When I saw you gulp that coffee, I was like, yeah. Yeah, I for some reason, I had this horrible headache, and then I thought, wait a minute, I'm having a caffeine withdrawals because I haven't had my coffee. So anyway, not to sidetrack from that, in the co-main event, Carlos Barza defeated Yan Xianan, the panda, and I mean absolutely bludgeoned her goes. This was called a number one contender fight by many hardcore fans, media, and probably other notables, right? I don't know that it was the official number one, but it sure looks that way. With Tatiana Suarez saying, I'm coming back, but as a flyweight. And with Joanna, obviously, always being in the mix, but she hasn't fought in over a year. And she's just lost a lot more than she's won. And even though she was in the fight of the year, she lost, and she lost to the opponent that gave her the fight of the year. So as much as everyone wants to pencil in Joanna in there somehow, I just don't think you can do it. Plus, let's not forget, she's 0-2 against the champ in title fights. So I really believe this was a number one contender fight. And what I was going to get at was, I can't remember the last time when a clear number one contender fight, one person just steamrolled the other. I mean, do you remember a panda moment?
Not really. No, because that was Carla Esparza's game plan, was just to implement what she does best from the get-go. And it wasn't just like – there have been moments where you'll watch Carla Esparza, she'll take someone down, and she'll just kind of grind them out. But she was constantly improving her position. She was doing a lot of things. To me, she looked like a person that was that has improved her game. And so you're right. I agree. I thought it was a number one contender match, and I thought Carla did – just as well as you could possibly do. And then on top of everything, you have a little bit of a storyline with Rose Namajunas, right? Like, you can sell that a little bit. So to me, yeah, everything about that makes sense to me, but it seemed like Dana kind of pumped the brakes a little bit. And I don't know what his play is, or I don't know if it's one of those where he just doesn't want to commit to something. But to me, that all just made sense. It was a little story playing out, and it's perfect.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when the quote was, we see you. No, you should – it should be more than that. This one should be obvious. Now, remember, I it feels like I bash the UFC and Dana White a lot. I've been hearing that on Instagram. I don't think that's fair, honestly, but I don't want to get into it. I only put out that –
George, I've heard the opposite of that. I've actually heard people go, this guy always protects the UFC, always protects Dana White. So – it can't go both ways.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. Because there's the YouTube audience and there's the Instagram audience. You're right. I have heard that as well. So in this instance, it just goes back and forth. There's plenty of times where I agree with Dana White and the UFC. Plenty of times, man. But sometimes I don't. And one of them is when he says, you know I don't matchmake on fight nights. But it's this, how dare you ask, right? And then all of a sudden we'll have a weekend where Dana, you know, Kamaru looked good. What's the feeling? Colby Covington's next. You know, he just tells you right away. And I wish the media would go, how can you say that? Because you know that you don't make fights on fight night, you know, just to be a jerk. But we're all professionals. We're not going to do that. But I know a lot of us are thinking that. Or maybe I'm the only immature MMA media member that thinks of shit like that. But anyway, I just thought, especially coming off a time where you had a certain, Colby's our guy. Well, then he should have said, Carla's our gal. You know what I mean? I just thought she earned it. I've never seen someone like in a position where I think this is five in a row, former champion, has a win over the current champion, and beat solid fighters along the way. I don't know, man. I think there's something that comes with that vote of confidence when you're told that fight meant something, that lady performed, and now she's getting a title shot. That Dana White, his words carry so much weight that right away, Carla and Rose becomes a massive fight. You know what I mean? And the minute you start undervaluing, like, what that may have been, like, I may have something better I would like or the company would benefit from, it's less sporting and it's more business. And I get it. It is a business. But a lot of times he also refers to this as being a sport. And it is a sport. And I'm proud to be a part of this sport. And this sport's one day going to be the number one sport. Remember? Take over baseball, the NFL, and soccer. And, of course, we said take it easy on the last two. Maybe baseball. I don't know. But you got to do it in a certain way. Like the Lakers, they took their L. You know what I mean? They took their L against the Suns. They're down 0-1 in a series that lasts seven games. Steph Curry, arguably the MVP, he had us goes. He had a knife to our throats. He would have sent us into the game where now we had to face the 9-10 winner. But instead, we beat him, and then he lost to Memphis. Now he goes home, the MVP. Who wouldn't want Steph Curry in the playoffs? He's awesome. You know what I mean? And now he's out of the playoffs, but that's the NBA. That's the way sports work. So I really wanted to see something a little bit more emphatic so we could start building Carlin Rose in that storyline.
But it's not dead yet. And here's what I think should happen. I think Rose should want to get that one back. I think she should throw her name out there and say, hey, this is what I want, UFC. Yeah. I think I've been a pretty good fighter for you guys. I've gone through some shit throughout my career, but I would personally like to get this one back. I think she could sell that fight. I think she should want to get it back, too.
The only thing I can think of is he might really want Tatiana at 115, and maybe he wants to have one more chat with her or something like that, but come on, man. Let's have these chats a lot earlier. Let's not wait this long to figure out what someone wants to do. This thing with Habib lasted 6 months, you know, and then Habib said, I was kind of retired 6 months ago, but all right, here, I'll fly in and sign these papers, even though I said it about 100 times. So I don't know. Maybe I'm homering. I'm in Tustin right now, California. That's where Carla is. I'm from Santa Ana, so I'm rooting for the SoCaler. And Tatiana Suarez is a SoCaler, too. I would love to see her fight for a title. Undefeated, high-level wrestlers. That's two wrestlers we're talking about. But it looks like she wants to go to 125. And honestly, with the way Valentina has been cleaning things out, 125 could probably use contenders. So yeah, we'll see. Now, remember, if Carla were to fight Rose and she wins, that opens things up for Joanna. I still think Joanna should get a win. But Joanna owns a dominating win over Carla. That division's fun because there's so many things that are happening between all those top strawweights. But for right now, I think the hand we're dealt with is Carla defeating Joanna. She deserves the number one spot again, or the title fight against Rose Namajunas.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. All right. So I'm glad I got that out. So YouTubers, let's fist bump, and Instagrammers, come at me, bro. Come at me, bro. Jared Vanderoff versus Justin Taffa. Holy cow, what a fight. I was telling the guys here from the Tustin Man Cave, if I was opening a nightclub, I think I'd want these two guys at the door. They just look like they won't put up with nonsense. They're big and intimidating and tough. And it looks like those two could clean out a fraternity of 17 that, you know, some of them guys stumble out and they want to get tough with the bouncers. I think those two could take out like 17 frat boys.
I think I would have Rothwell and Barnett at my door.
I'll take those two as well. But these two were the ones that performed on Saturday, and they were slinging, man. What a fight. The chins on both of those guys, the blood. I thought the cut – didn't it look like at one point the cut was like this horrible gash where it might even stop the fight until they wiped them down and it was a smaller cut? Good eye on Mark Smith, because I saw him go like this to the – I think he was talking to the doctor as he was reffing the fight. He managed to go in there and get a good look. But I really thought, oh my gosh, we're gonna see a skull or something, because it was just this big of dark red, you know, different from the blood that had already trickled down his chest. Goes, it looked like a horror movie, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it right now. Dude, it was so gross.
What the hell?
I don't know, it just grossed me out, because you're right. I thought we were gonna see that little, like, you know, you could see the skull a little bit. Sometimes in cuts like that, dude, I don't know. If any of my bones are ever showing, I'm stopping whatever the hell I'm doing, and I got to get that fixed. There's no way I could keep fighting knowing that half my skull's being exposed like that. Dude, forget that, man. That mat was bloody, dude, by the end of the night. Between, like, Esparza, like, a lot of people got cut.
I've seen some bloody fights, but for one man's whole chest, the way it was, it looked like a movie, you know, a movie with somebody that hasn't been around, you know, much. And he goes, let's just do his whole chest, because it just looked, I don't know. Usually it's like on one arm or one side or whatever. It was the whole face. And then all this part right here was just, I don't know. It was something else, man.
I got one more of those gags, George, before I think I'll actually throw up. So I think you have to change the subject.
We'll move on from Justin Vanderaugh, Jared Vanderaugh, who defeated Justin Taffa. Norma Dumont defeated Felicia Spencer. Norma Dumont cashed as an underdog. I had heard from one of my sharps that was a play. And I was like, what? Because I kind of like Felicia Spencer. But I took it, and luckily I shared it with the fellas here right before the fight started, and they were happy. Ricardo Ramos defeated Bill Algeo, lost that one. I thought Algeo was gonna win. Boy, the Algeo that I saw against Ricardo Lamas, I thought maybe he had some a little promise. And I'm not crapping on the guy. It's just he lost, you know, and that's a setback. So we'll see. But I think he needs to work a little bit on his urgency, his volume. You know, I thought he could have beaten Ramos, but I don't want to take anything away from Ramos, because he's the one that got his hand raised. So congrats to him. Jack Hermanson defeated Edmund Shabazian, pretty much dominated him. I drank the Kool-Aid there, because Hermanson was like, I had COVID. I don't know how I'm going to recover. I don't know what my cardio is going to be like. And I was like, And I was already kind of down the middle on that one. But then I went with the younger guy, the guy that just took an L, the guy that just, you know, got humbled by Derek Brunson. Shabazian, he's going to come back strong. Lost it.
So I thought Shabazian was going to be one of the next guys to take that step. But this fight, between the last fight and this fight, there's just holes that he has to address. And it's so difficult. Nice.
His hands are nice, but once they get in close quarters or on the ground, there's just nothing much there. And he doesn't look strong or long and wiry, so that he can neutralize, he just kind of gets bludgeoned. I don't know if he could drop to 170, honestly, but those couple of 185ers look big, or they just feel big against them.
Yeah, he's got to go back and figure things out, take a little bit of time off, and really address things, because the UFC is just not a place to learn that. It's difficult to be doing that when you have a fight signed. You're just training for that guy. He needs to go back and just focus all his training on him.
Agreed. Ben Rothwell defeated Chris Barnett. Court McGee defeated Claudio Silva. Bruno Gustavo da Silva defeated Victor Rodriguez. Joshua Koulibaly defeated Shaolin. Oh, boy. Nurdin Mike, and David Dvorak defeated Juan Camilo Ronderos, Demir Ismagulov defeated Rafael Alves. I was listening to Dan Thoms breakdown on the Protect Your Neck podcast. I was driving, actually, and he was referencing this fight as he was talking about it. And he goes, Ismagulov? Something about I looked in the mirror, Ismagulov? And I was like, Dan, get back into the breakdown, you know? And I noticed he was fucking around with the name, but it cracked me up. Ismagulov. So shout out to Dan Thom on the Protect Your Neck podcast. But yeah, man, any thoughts on any of those fights on the undercard?
I found the Rothwell one to be interesting because you kind of want to know where Ben is at here at this point in his career. Ben has been doing this for such a long time. I want to say, didn't they say it was like 54 fights or something like that? Like, that is a lot, dude. That you should never get to the point where you can't remember being in a physical fight with someone. Like, if somebody brings up a name and you go, I think I actually got in a fight with that guy. You should never get to that point. So he's been doing this for a really long time, so we have to figure out where he's at because he's had some hurdles along the way. And this was a difficult fight to figure that out because Barnett was taking his shots and still coming forward, and he landed some of his own. So I can't tell if Barnett is just a really tough dude or if Ben did lose a little bit of a step. But Ben looked very calm, and he looked like he knew it was just a matter of time, so I think he's just taking his time. But most of Ben's shots were landing, and he was waiting for the opportunity to throw that uppercut to counter. And then he ended it with his go-go choke. And I hope that really does build a little bit of momentum for Big Ben.
Yeah, me too. He's been through a lot. Remember, the city of Kenosha, Wisconsin, where he's from, where he has a gym, I think has had two big, big incidents. One was two shootings, if I'm not mistaken. And they really, really hit him hard, you know, his community hard. And he also had the birth of his son, which this is a great emotion, you know, bringing in his son. He's extremely happy. He's tweeted, he's posted a lot of pictures of his son watching his fight, made his heart melt. But Ben, like I say, is a real emotional guy. And then remember, Philippe Lenz was the opponent and they moved it. So, yeah, this fight right here should have been, how can I say, according to the odds at least, Ben should have steamrolled. But that Barnett guy wouldn't go away, even though you could see Barnett gassing. Barnett probably didn't belong in there. He's tough. You got to give respect to Barnett. He's tough. He went in there and he battled the former IFL champion. And guess what, guys? This was Ben Rothwell's first fight in Las Vegas after that long career that he's had. Can you believe that?
Wait a minute. Ever?
Yeah.
He's had a lot of Californias, I think, right?
He's had Los Angeles, but he's never had Las Vegas. And I had to go back and look because I thought I saw him fight at IFL.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking of the fight he had with Roy Nelson, but it wasn't in Las Vegas. But I know we saw Roy Nelson fight in IFL in Las Vegas. But, Ben Rothwell's first fighting in Las Vegas. Can you believe that?
That's crazy. That should be a trivia question.
Exactly. Think about all the times you interview a guy that's had over 50 fights. The last thing you want to say is that fallback, like, but you know, you want to fight in the fight capital of the world one day, don't you? You know, because you're figuring, oh, he's probably already done that somehow. But no, this was the first time. This is fight number 52 and first time in Las Vegas. Too bad it wasn't like in front of a crowd. I think every combat sport athlete, unless you're some sort of a geek that can just fight, I think you have to use the word again, geek out on fighting in the – I mean, maybe it's just me. I grew up with that open-air Caesar's Palace, all right? I grew up hearing – I didn't see it, but hearing about these fights that Muhammad Ali had in the Philippines, in Uganda, right? Zaire, was the other one. So he took his fighting – to different parts of the world. And then obviously seeing the big Tokyo Dome, you know, and seeing Pride and that being kind of like a stadium fight. So you start figuring what are the iconic venues, at least according to the history of boxing, which lured me into combat sports, and then MMA, which has unfolded here in front in my lifetime, you know. And obviously, Las Vegas is tremendous because it ticks both boxes, boxing and mixed martial arts. So I think that's a valid question for any fighter. Any fighter should geek out over the opportunity to fight there. Now, when your first time is the Apex, maybe you say, well, I can answer the trivia question, but I really would love to see Ben like at a T-Mobile or if they ever have that stadium show. I just hopefully they give those spots to deserving fighters that have put in their time, you know, to help make the sport build.
Sport. A lot of people forget too, like Caesar's Palace was great. The Mirage did it as well, right? And they had, I think, a couple Tyson fights.
Mirage also had kickboxing. I remember watching a lot of kickboxing. Remy Bonjansky and a lot of the guys that fought. It was like, I forget the name of that league, but I would see it a lot on DirecTV, ESPN, Live from the Mirage. Mike, I forget the guy's name, not. Mike Callum's a boxer. I'm starting to blank out on names now, but I remember Bonjansky, and a few of the other guys. In fact, I think that world coming together, honestly, I think Dana White used to go to those fights as well. Stitch Duran and Dana White, I think, made themselves an acquaintance there, you know, not just boxing, but through kickboxing too. But yeah, the Mirage hosted events, the Thomas and Mack hosted events. I think Thomas and Mack had Holyfield and Riddick Bowe, if you remember those fights. So yeah. And then Floyd's house was the MGM. I mean, there's been a lot of great fights of folks. There's been some awesome fights at Caesar's Palace Open Air Stadium. I wish they could bring that back.
I always wonder, I know Dana White can't stand Oscar De La Hoya, but I wonder if he at least respected his career. Because he was a fun boxer to watch. He really was. He had some really, really good fights and his style was fun because he was kind of like Sugar Ray. Like technically he was very good, but he could also throw bombs when he needed to. Like he was very pinpoint. He was fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll tell you a quick story. I remember one time when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez, a lot of the fans that love Chavez, whether you were Mexican from Mexico or just like Mexican American, Chavez was your guy. But at the same time, you had a guy that was the golden boy who won the gold medal for the United States in Barcelona in 1992. Good-looking cat from L.A. I was kind of a fan of him, too, so I hated that these two had to collide. But I remember going to everybody's heard of pay-per-view. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of closed circuit. So they wanted to do this fight different. It wasn't available on pay-per-view. It was available on closed circuit. Closed circuit meant you had to go to an arena or a theater or something like that. That's the only place they were going to show it. You weren't going to be able to watch it at a bar. You weren't going to be able to watch it at home. You had to go somewhere, and they called it closed circuit. So me and my buddy Gabe and his grandpa, the late Joe Morales, great man, we went to Long Beach. I think it was the Pyramid. And we went there, and we watched it there. And I remember the crowd. Like, I was 50-50 on who I wanted to root for. I liked them both. But the crowd almost brought the Mexican side out of me, you know, and here I am, I'm an American. I love my red, white, and blue. I cheer for the Olympians, but somehow after a few drinks, I was like, yeah, maybe this is just Chavez's night. So anyway, that's just the feeling I had. It's not like I put on any paint on my face or had a flag or none. That's just the feeling I had, you know. I mean, the crowd was pro Julio Cesar Chavez. The fight starts, goes, and then I could have sworn it was 60 seconds. And I don't want to make you throw up, but do you remember how bloody Chavez's face was? Like, in 90 seconds, De La Hoya was already fucking him up. I couldn't believe it.
I just remember how dejected he was sitting on that stool. And it's funny because it all comes full circle because Oscar had that same look against Pacquiao.
Just
sitting there kind of going, man, I've just lost a lot, like a big step, you know, like I just don't have it anymore. And you see that, like, there are times in our lives where we have a bad day or something and we go home and we sit down or we lay in bed and we're thinking these things out and we come to these conclusions. These fucking people have that same thing happen to them live on TV in front of the entire world. That's just terrible. I mean, That's why, you know, when you hear about how much they make in boxing, you go, okay, well, at least they got that. But I think that's where sometimes mixed martial artists, they go through the exact same shit that boxers do, the same type of camps. Well, they run just as much, you know, but they don't make as much.
You brought up Garbrandt's name, and that's a little bit of the look I saw in his eyes, except he came out and continued fighting. But the look wasn't like, I don't have it tonight. I want to retire, because I think that was De La Hoya's last fight against Pacquiao. But it wasn't that. It was just like, this guy's got my number. You know, a lot of the MMA fighters accept losses way better than in boxing. In boxing, a loss can be so tragic. But in MMA, you can get a little comfortable with it. And remember, Cody's been to the top. And with these 4-ounce gloves and all, and the history of MMA showing us that, you know, people can repeat as champions, I think you can find that confidence again, you know. Sometimes you have to go to a different camp or whatever, or just get a few wins. Like Carlos Sparza. Mm-hmm. Carlos Sparza got thumped, goes, by Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and look where she's at now. You know what I mean? So good on her, but you have to be really strong up here. So we'll see if Cody can bounce back and get back in there. You know what I mean? But Cody had a little bit of that look too, like, maybe I don't have it tonight. Oscar's was like, maybe that's the end of a career type of look. Julio Cesar Chavez, I don't know what his look was, because I was in the arena, but I just remember thinking this was still standard definition days, so we couldn't even see it too well. But I was like, what is going on? Like, I just couldn't believe that someone could be that red so fast.
Yeah. I don't even remember how we got on this topic, but I'm guessing maybe it started a little bit with Paul Felder. And I will say this about Paul Felder. I don't feel like Paul Felder is a guy who can't compete. Paul Felder is really, really tough, and he can give just about anybody a good night. But I think it's very important, one of the things he said, and it's just, he just doesn't have that drive. And that's the first box that you got to check when you're doing this as a career. Like, you have to have that drive that makes you get up, that makes you want to train harder. Cause I mean, we've all been in situations where we just don't want to be there, and it's never fun, you know, and this is a dangerous sport. And lucky for him, he's been able to carve out a niche and being able to do analyst work, and I think he does stunt work, right, and acting. So he has somewhere to go. And I think this is probably the second he said he just didn't have the drive anymore, I thought this is a great decision for you. But as far as skills go and all that, Paul's got him. It's just, it all comes down to here.
I have the quote right here. Sorry, my internet's a little sketchy here. I don't have that burning desire to fight for many more years to become a champion. So he wanted to make sure, not only can I get through a camp or win my next fight, can I string together some fights to fight for a world title? That was his end goal. He says no. And he says, I love the UFC with all my heart for everything that they've given me. So it was a well thought out retirement announcement, you know, because remember, he fought a few months ago. It was against RDA, right? When he showed up to announce, and the next thing you know, he was a fighter. Mm-hmm. And before that, I remember the Hooker fight. I can't remember if there was another one sandwiched in there, but he won some good fights. He beat Barbosa. So he won some good fights along the way. But the new career he has as a broadcaster, I think, really probably eases that a little bit. And that road to get to the title would require a lot, because there's Poirier versus McGregor, and then you got your trailers, you know, your Justin Gaethjes, Gillespies, Makhachevs of the world. You got to get in there and probably win 3 times if you're Paul Felder, if you want to fight for a title. And I think he thought, I don't have the desire to do that. You know, if Dana White were to call him and say, hey, you got the desire to fight Charles Oliveira in 3 weeks in Brazil, fuck yeah, Felder will find it. That guy's a fighter. But I thought he was very mature and responsible in the decision making. A retirement shouldn't take lightly, you know. But I think because of that, he'll be at peace with it, and he can stay retired and just contribute to MMA the way he has as a broadcaster, and he's doing a great job doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like them.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about since we mentioned that De La Hoya and Dana White, I mean, it's just fun to, I guess, keep it going. We know Dana White's not going to fight De La Hoya. Dana White knows how to box, can box, but I don't think he would ever box De La Hoya because even though they're about the same age, De La Hoya was a great world champion, and Dana White just fought, you know, trained boxers and was around the boxing game. But the only way Dana could do something like that is 51-year-old Dana maybe boxed 65-year-old Oscar De La Hoya. Maybe I could see an exhibition, four rounds for some big charity, but no. Dana's competitive still. Oscar would be competitive. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, that's one thing he can sling around. You know, when you have those types of skills, you can always say, well, how about I just kick your ass? You know, and it's kind of a mic drop moment. But he's pissed because Dana White wouldn't let him box GSP, and so that they both could make a lot of money.
I mean, right away, I could tell you Dana White has absolutely nothing to gain from that type of situation, right, to put himself in there with a former pro boxer. But I understand why Oscar does it, because at the end of the day, we're all men and we all have this core where the second, no matter who it is, somebody says they could destroy you, there's something in you that says, oh yeah, or you just don't want to look like a punk. Even though it is a former gold medalist, like, I mean, come on, man. There's just something within you that I think kind of bugs you to see that. And I think it's just Oscar pushing his buttons. But he knows there's no way in hell that would ever happen.
Yeah. What did you think of Joshua Fabia and Diego's breakup, along with the direction that it's going in? You know, Diego says, we're done. I'll have more to talk about that, you know, next week. Joshua Fabia's already done interviews, and now he's saying, Diego did some weird stuff, and I've been used for the past 2 years. And it's, you know, so from his side, he's getting ugly, and he's already revealing things behind the scenes. He's got addiction problems and blah, blah, blah.
I guess who didn't see that happening, right? I was surprised that this relationship lasted as long as it did, but I kind of felt like that the whole parting with the UFC was probably the end game there. But the thing about Joshua Fabia is what he's doing, I think we all expected from him. But if he wants to maintain any type of presence in mixed martial arts or coaching or anything, this is like the first thing that you have to take in mind is everybody else is going to see this. And so I've always been of the mentality of, if he's doing this to Diego right now, airing out his dirty laundry, who's to say he wouldn't do it to me? So just me, I would never get involved with a person like that. I think there's just certain lines that you can't cross, and he's saying a lot of personal things right now. And if he wants to have any type of business relationship or anything with other fighters, they would be insane at this point, even on top of everything that we already know about his training techniques and all that. Just as a person, why would you get involved with this guy at this point? Like, I just don't. It's so weird, man. Like, this is such a weird situation. And some of the things that, like, he thinks he's airing out as dirty laundry, like, I think we all kind of assumed it, right? Like, we didn't think Diego was really this shrewd businessman that we didn't all know about, right, on the side. Like, yeah, I mean, Diego's even talked about some of these things. But yeah, well, hey, he doesn't tip. I mean, like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. But, you know, that person, like, the tipping's more like ball busting. The whole, when he started mentioning the divorce, the kid, you know, I don't care about the $3,000 Mercedes or he doesn't tip. I think that's something. I mean, he just should leave that alone. But once he started getting personal with, you know, the divorce, his kids, addiction, that's a bit much. I think Fabia's 15 minutes, which has gone way past that, is going to definitely be up. I think it was just one dude, you know, one fella that he was working with, and you know, and then now that runs over. But it's unfortunate it's gone this way, and hopefully Diego just says, hey man, he said what he said, that's it. I'd like to find my next employer, I want to keep fighting if he does, or if maybe he might be done too. Who knows? But if he wants, because remember, this was going to be his last fight against Cerrone, by the way. It's not like he was looking to go, you know, other places. But if he wants some closure, maybe one more paycheck, hopefully he can find it. And that be that, so that it doesn't continue with Fabia and Diego. But I don't see anyone else working with Fabia, so I think that'll be it. I think he just was part of – this is a sport that a lot of people have been associated with, and a lot of people have had a good run, and then other people and turned it into something different or whatever, or been able to provide. But I've heard a lot of stories of a lot of people that came into this sport with a lot of money and exit with nothing, you know, and then they just go on and do something else.
I guess one question that I would ask you is, you're Dana White, and you find out Diego has severed ties here. Could you put everything aside and say, all right, kid, I'll give you one more fight. This is the last one. You walk away with your gloves on the mat as a UFC fighter, and that's that? Or did Diego just burn too many bridges?
I think Diego would have to face him in person. Probably apologize for, because I don't think he was wrong. I mean, I think Diego was right in terms of like, hey man, I was part of season one. I was part of a group of guys that, you know, helped launch this company, you know, when they were struggling. But to do all that publicly, I don't know that it always goes well. You know, it's not, what he was saying wasn't wrong. He definitely had a hand in it. But once you start airing out that stuff, who knows? Like, I'm sure there's been a lot of times where the UFC's probably done some stuff for Diego. I don't know. I don't know the full story is what I'm getting at. But I'm trying to carve out a situation here. It would require Diego going to Vegas, meeting with Dana White. And remember, he says he's been at the PI looking to run into Dana White, even accidentally, he said. But I think if you really want to get it done, you just do it. You apologize and say, look, I said some dumb stuff in the past. I apologize. I would like one more fight. I'm no longer with this guy. Can I get it? Now, that said, I think Dana White, if he's going to do it, would probably have to put him through a full physical evaluation. And if Diego can pass that, maybe he even does Cerrone versus Diego, because Cerrone can't have too many fights left either. So maybe he does that one, or maybe he does something else. I don't know. But that dude, without facing him in person, not going to happen. Zero chance. Facing him in person, 5% chance. Even then, I don't see nothing good.
I'd give him in person, I'd give him a 20% chance.
I'd give him 5%. Because remember, he said a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I don't know. I wish him the best. I'm glad he's not with the other guy. I was kind of giggling when you were talking about it, because I can't get out of my head. Homeboy hanging upside down, and he thinks he's Rocky, you know, and he's just hitting the flesh of another man. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. And then Fabius still defends a lot of his tactics, and he's talking about Diego throwing a fight, you know, because the commission wanted to talk to him about that death punch or death hold or whatever. Such ridiculous stuff, man.
I just don't understand. Yeah. The guy just likes attention, I think. But what I don't get is, like, when in a fight would you get hit and go, oh yeah, this reminds me of the time I hung upside down and now I should do this? Like, that just, there was nothing that could possibly do to help you win a fight. It was nothing. It was ridiculous, man.
Yeah. I don't know. The time, I couldn't believe when I saw it. I was laughing my ass off. I was just thinking, like, this guy can't shock me anymore, and then he did, you know, and there was Diego hanging upside down. I was like, oh my god. And then reading people's reactions on Twitter, it's just kind of a crack up to me. Hey, real quick, let's start turning the page a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about Bellator and Invicta, but before we do that, do you agree Esparza's next, or can you think of another scenario where Esparza Namajunas doesn't have?
I think she's next. I mean, I can't. There's no scenario that you could bring up that makes more sense. It makes sense not just on Carla's side. It makes sense on Rose's side. There's a storyline behind it. I think she's next.
Okay. Sterling has Jan. Sanhagen has Dillashaw, and Asunsa has Munoz. So a lot of bantamweights are tied up. You still have like a Frankie Edgar out there for Rob Font. But who would you give Rob Font next is my question, I guess. Or do you maybe wait out the winners of some of these fights? I don't think he's next for the Jan Sterling winner. I don't think he's that, because I think Sanhagen has the pole position if he can beat Dillashaw. Dillashaw is going to make one hell of a case that it's him. If he can get past Sanhagen, maybe some might not argue. But he's also already beaten Marais, so we can't use Marais. So I was looking at the USA Today rankings, and the fighters that haven't been booked are like Edgar, Cruz, maybe. I don't know. What do you do next for Rob Font?
Jan and Sterling is going to take a while to play out. I think we all just forget that's not going to happen for a while. And I don't know that the winner of Dillashaw, especially if it's Dillashaw and Sanhagen, is going to want to sit around for too long. So I think he should fight the winner of that fight. But if that's not the route he wants to go, and Corey Sanhagen wins that fight and says, you know what, I'm next, I'm just going to chill until then I think you do look at names kind of like that, you know, like a Dominic Cruz or someone like that, where you could still keep active, but also have another very impressive skin on your wall, right? Former champion in Dominic Cruz. So something like that would probably make the most sense, I think.
Rob says he doesn't want to look back, but I think he would make the exception for Dillashaw, Cruz, Edgar. Those are all former champions and big names, and you can headline your own fight night, you know, or maybe be part of a main card of a pay-per-view. So your name still stays relevant, but you stay busy. And look, I'm not trying to book him for the next 2 months. I think he could use some proper rest, but I think he should take one more fight. And then if he wins that fight, he could be looking at a title. He's also got a couple losses from like 3-4 years ago. Maybe he may want to look at something like that, like Munoz and Asunsa. So if Munoz can beat, would I say he's got Aldo? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got Aldo. So maybe that might interest him, because I think Munoz, having beaten Font a few years ago, could have an inside track. But Munoz is also the guy. I mean, first he's got to get past Aldo, but Munoz also has some losses along the way too. I'm telling you, this division, a lot of guys have picked each other off. Remember, he lost to Aljamain Sterling, and he also lost to Frankie Edgar. So he may have that Font win from a while ago, but he lost to those two. He also beat Cody Garbrandt. So I'm telling you, man, the bantamweight division is exciting with all these possibilities.
Mm-hmm. It's the best division, I think, in the UFC.
Arguably, yeah, you're right. So that's our kind of our little recap there of the Font and Garbrandt fight card. We gave you all the winners. We gave you some possibilities there for the winners and losers. Jan Jonan, I'm not sure who we can match her up with at this time. Maybe a Marina Rodriguez, or I don't know. I know Dern's off limits. She's coming off a win. Maybe that's the fight that Joanna would take to get her back, I suppose. But because she is technically coming off a loss, and so is Panda. But then a lot of people were saying, I'd love to see Rodriguez and Joanna. So that would be someone coming off a win versus coming off a loss. But I think Dern is kind of being held in a spot where she can maybe follow Carla. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think she's become very, very popular, and she's become a pretty damn good fighter. All right, I think we filled in all the blanks. Cody Garbrandt, look, he'll probably catch somebody coming off a loss. I don't think he's done. And, it's just that this one was a tough one. The bonuses, by the way, went to Jared Vanderaugh and Justin Toffa for Fight of the Night. No shocker there. Esparza and Bruno Gustavo da Silva, he got the other bonus. We had a lot of decisions on the main card. That kind of slowed things down a little bit. By the way, the only finish we had was Carla Esparza. So thank you, Carla, for giving us that at least. On Friday night, Bellator 259 took place. Chris Cyborg dominated Leslie Smith before she finished her in round five. Any thoughts there, Goose?
Well, I mean, I think we all kind of knew it was going to go something like that. The thing is, like, Leslie Smith would have to land a pretty brutal shot on Chris Cyborg to have any sort of success in that type of fight. But she just doesn't have that type of power or that speed. Like, just all the check marks are on Chris Cyborg's side. And there aren't that many fighters out there that can steal some of those check marks away from Chris Cyborg. I guess what it looks like is probably going to be next is maybe a Kat Zingano. And at least there's a little bit of a storyline there, you know, that you could sell a little bit. And Kat's a pretty decent fighter who seems like she could still be getting better. You know, she's not scared of her. But for the most part, it's Chris Cyborg sort of just running away from things over there and running, I mean, like, away from challenges, you know, like she's just got everybody's number. But at the same time, she's chasing something that she probably can't get unless she beats Amanda Nunes.
I agree with everything. I think Zingano should be next. Zingano has name value, coming off a win, decent record. She's actually beaten Amanda Nunes. Not that that should matter, but I think Kat Zingano should be next. I thought that should have been an automatic for Scott Coker. I guess, to be fair to the promoters, maybe when they say, well, we'll see, that has to do with not having contract situations in order. You know, maybe someone's technically on their last fight and they got to negotiate. Someone's leverage can get stronger with the results of that certain fight. So sometimes I give them that pass, but then there's other times where I just love hearing, so now that Usman beat Masvidal, what's next for Usman? Oh, Colby's next. You know, I just love having some sort of a direction. I don't care that it's not happening in 2 weeks or in 2 months. I kind of like knowing who might be next and then focusing on that. So for Cyborg and Zingano, I thought that would have been a lot more automatic, but it wasn't. But I think I'm in agreement with everything you said, including Cyborg. I'll give her this. She somehow stays motivated because it's got to kill her that having four major belts, being as great as she is, she still can't come back on a Monday and know that she's at the top of the pound-for-pound rankings, which she was for such a long time. It's just held by Nunes. There's nothing she can do about it. There's no co-promoting between Bellator and UFC. She wanted to get paid, and she went to Bellator. She felt she was going to get paid more. I thought at some point they could have figured out a way to run back Nunes and Cyborg. It would have taken maybe a fight. But come on. At 45, I think you could have just given it to us again. And I would have been happy to see it because they're two badass fighters. But that's where she's at right now. I think... You know, I was thinking outside the box. If something happened at PFL, could Cyborg go there just to do one season? Like, could she fight in early 2022 and then be part of PFL's tournament? Or, excuse me, they hate that. Just the regular season and playoffs. But maybe represent Bellator. I don't know. Bellator's with Showtime. These guys are with ESPN. It's not as easy as it sounds, huh?
Nah, never is. But really, when you think of the format that PFL has, I think that's something that Chris Cyborg would love. You know, when do we ever – we see fighters sometimes when we go, hoo-hoo, that fighter's gotten a little big, right? They must be out of camp. Cyborg is never out of camp. She's always doing something. So I think something like PFL would actually be great for her. Just paycheck, paycheck, paycheck. Keep fighting.
She can be Kayla. That could draw Nunes, but again, I just think Nunes is like, oh, I already beat her. I'm good, you know? I mean, that's that. How am I going to top that performance? But I think Kayla quietly is hunting down Nunes, quietly and respectfully, I should say, their teammates. But the only way Nunes is not going to be the GOAT of women's MMA is there's got to be some sort of, I call him a round robin. Like, if Harrison can beat Nunes, but Cyborg can beat Harrison, then maybe you got something there. But right now, Nunes just stands above all. You can't even put Nunes on a Mount Rushmore because a Mount Rushmore, I almost look at him as four equals. Nunes is just like on Mount Olympia or whatever, you know, just by herself. And then she may have some people under her, kind of like a mob family. You know, you have someone at the top and then you got capos or conciliaries. And I see her as a mob boss, I guess.
Are you almost done with Sopranos, by the way?
Nah, just because, well, you threw Lavin's show, the MTV Challenge, and I had to power through that. And then, I've been taking it slow.
Where are you at? Like season 3?
Season 5, episode 3 or something like that, episode 4.
How many are there?
I think there's 6 seasons, 6 or 7 seasons. Remember last season, season 6 was like 2 parts or something like that.
Well, so then you're pretty close to the end.
Yeah. But you asked if I was done. And the answer is no. But yeah, I'm closer to finishing for sure than where I started. Also on this card, Bellator 259, we had Leandro Higo versus Darian Caldwell. Huge loss for Caldwell. Remember, he's a former champion who had a run at 145 pounds. He tried to be part of that Grand Prix. It didn't go well, so now he comes back to 35, which is popping, by the way, over at Bellator as well. Took a loss. I don't know if this would cost him if they were to come up with a Grand Prix, but I remember I told you, if you have 8 solid names, you run a Grand Prix over at Bellator, and I think they have 8 solid names. The only problem is I think only one of these two could be part of that 8. But who knows? He carries status as a former champion, but he just hasn't been the same since he lost to Kyoji Horiguchi twice. And now he takes to Leandro Higo. Austin Vanderford powered through and defeated Fabian Edwards. He stays undefeated at 11-0, probably following John Salter towards the run at Gegard Mousasi, or at least I thought that until I found out Yoel Romero might fight Gegard Mousasi. So maybe Vanderford can fight John Salter and the winner can get the winner of those two. I know I threw a lot at you, but give me your thoughts on Higo Caldwell, Vanderford Edwards, and that news that Mousasi might be fighting Romero. Whatever interests you, go ahead.
I actually kind of like that matchup. I think that would be a fun matchup with Mousasi and Romero. And then to answer your question about a Grand Prix, I mean, you could always do that little play-in thing, you know, where you have 2-4 fighters or whatever, and you just kind of do a little play-in for the last 2 spots.
The NBA?
So, yeah, something like that, you know. You could always do something like that. And then Austin, he won the fight. He dominated the fight, but he did take a couple shots here and there. I think you kind of need that as a fighter. So I just see him kind of progressing slowly but surely. I think he's going to be a guy that we're definitely going to be talking a lot about next year.
Yeah, for sure. I'm warm to Mousasi versus Romero. Romero's just a huge, huge name, a top middleweight. So I don't see how Salter could beat Salty. But I could see Salter versus Vanderford solidifying a number one. Put it on the same card as Mousasi and Romero, and get that middleweight division going again. Get it cracking. You know, it's all I can say. It's not where the bantamweights are at. It's not where the welterweights are at, but I think they're ahead of where the lightweights are at. But anyway, those were those 3 fights there that I wanted to talk about. Jaleel Willis, keeping an eye on him. He moves to 15-2. He's a 170-pounder for Bellator. Hannah Guy defeated Valerie Lareda. So she's now undefeated. I wonder if that'll have her maybe focus, not to say she's not focused on MMA, because I don't know her that well, but I think she's regarded as the fighter and the Instagram model, I guess. You know, like there's just seems to be other things that occupy her time as well. One of them being her popularity on Instagram, which good for her. I'm not hating on it, but a loss is what makes you reevaluate, you know, what you're doing and how you're occupying your time. And do you want to make a run at Juliana Velasquez at some point? And if you do, well, then, you know, what are you going to do to tighten up your game?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen other fighters go through similar things, right? Like Tyron Woodley kind of comes to mind. He had a moment in his career where he had a lot of acting and the rapping and all that. It's just, we hear fighters talk about how difficult it is of a job to just do fighting. So I can't imagine adding other things and distractions and all that, so. We'll see. Hopefully she can make it. I think she's tough. I just think she needs to shore up some holes.
What did you think of that video going around of her coach? Which, by the way, I can't find it anymore. If anybody has it, I'd love to see it. At MMA Junkie George on Twitter. But I heard the coach gave her some brutal honesty, and a lot of people praised them for doing that. And others were like, you're crushing her. You know, of course, that's just the internet. You're never going to get all fist bumps.
That's what he's getting paid for. This is not the sport to be lying or blowing smoke up somebody's ass. This is a brutal sport, and you have to be brutal in your assessment. everything he said was right. You know, she had to get away from those things, and she just wasn't reacting.
Yeah. Congrats to Saad Awad. He got a win. Grant Neal, keep an eye on him. And Aviv Gozali, I think, is also a tough lightweight. Keep an eye on him. Davion Franklin moved to 3-0. Leah McCourt, she's a featherweight. She got a win as well, moving to 5-1. I know some of these names because I'm part of the Bellator ranking, so I've kind of looked at them really, really close, not just fighting, but what got them to this big dance of the Bellator show. Alexander Shabili defeated Alfie Davis, another name to look out for. Moving on to earlier on Friday night, the Invicta card was on Axis TV and worldwide on their YouTube channel. We told you about it throughout the week. Hopefully you guys caught it. Karina Rodriguez defends her title. Excuse me, won the vacant title against Diana Torquato. She got a unanimous decision there, and she's the new flyweight champion. And then Alicia Zapatella defended her title versus Jessica Del Boni. Did a split decision there. Zapatella, a recent guest on for us on MMA Junkie Radio video. And so I was happy to see her because she was a really, really nice young lady to talk to. And then the one young lady that Julie Kessie told us to keep an eye on, Jose Storz, she also got a win over Maria Jose Favela. Any thoughts on Invicta goes on Access TV and these title fights or anything else?
Well, it's good to see them back, you know, on Access TV now. But I thought what was very interesting is they're the ones that have been experimenting with open scoring, and that actually came into play in one of the championship fights. So just adds a little bit more, a different wrinkle to the night.
Yeah, for sure. I'm still not a fan of it because I always think of the worst case scenario of it, not necessarily how it could help. Like, I agree. There's some things that would make it interesting if you were to look up and go, oh, okay, that's how they're scoring. And now I got to come out and deliver this. I take control of these 5 minutes and either go out on my shield or come back and knock somebody out because I'm not going to take it on the judges' scorecards. That way, if there's not that whole uncertainty of like, what? I thought I won the first round and the third. Why is my hand not getting raised? But then there's just some parts that I think would make it, especially when it involves eye pokes or illegal fouls. You know you're up. We go to the judges' scorecards. You know what I mean? Oh, man, mm-hmm. I just – that or someone who's up and just is running and running – I think the booze would come in and there as well. I don't know. And then there's just such a compelling case for, you know, the announcer, that time when the judges are getting their scores together and then all of a sudden they come out and say, for the winner and still or and new, like Joanna and Zhang Weili. I mean, we were all kind of on the edge of our seats there. Cejudo, mm-hmm. Demetrius Johnson, we thought, man, you know, we think he may have gotten it. Who knows? Like, That's high drama too. I don't know if I'm ready to replace it, but I can appreciate them experimenting it and checking it out. All right, folks, that's our show for today. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Mondays and Thursdays here on MMA Junkie. Goz and I bring you MMA Junkie Radio. Excuse me. Sorry we couldn't connect with Christos Giagos. We will try and reconnect with them throughout the week. And you can find a lot of our interviews on youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. We plan on catching up, hopefully, with Carlos Sparza, Christos Giagos, and a few other guests this week. You can also catch the spinning back click, the rankings report, and a lot of the videos that the whole website does, you know, pre and post fight for UFC, Bellator. There's a lot there. You got to go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video and check it out. Also want to officially welcome Matthew Wells to MMA Junkie. Hope to speak to him soon. I think today's his first day, so they're pretty much giving him the run of the office. Here's your station. Here are your passwords. You know, lunch is at this time. You get 2:15s. Go to work. You know, no, I'm just kidding. I've been reading online. He got a nice welcoming from MMA media, and a lot of people are saying some really, really nice things about him. So I can't wait to meet him, and hopefully we can bring him here on MMA Junkie Radio so you guys can meet him as well. All right, folks, have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion.